Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want when you want with access to over 2,400 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit Lynda.com/know-how. That's LYNDA.com/know-how. And by iFixit. You can fix it, and iFixit makes it easy with free step-by-step repair guides, high-quality replacement parts, and all the tools you'll ever need. For $10 off your purchase of $50 or more, go to iFixit.com/twit and enter the code KNOWHOW at checkout. On this episode of Know How, if this, then that, then we talk all about backup, and Patrick and I make fun of crap. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we bend, build, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Patrick Delahanty.
And for the next hour or so, we're going to show you some of the things that we've been geeking out to. News stories, projects, DIY maker stuff, and hopefully you'll be able to bring some knowledge back into your own geek life. Now, Patrick, this last week, there was a little bit of buzz, a little bit of excitement in the space community, right?
Yeah.
You heard about the SpaceX thing?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
yep.
They unveiled the new Dragon capsule.
That's right, the Dragon version 2. Now, the first Dragon was actually fantastic. I mean, it was a privatized space vehicle. It worked well. It docked the space station. It could carry 7,300 pounds of cargo. But there was one big thing, and that is it couldn't carry men. And if we're going to have some sort of vehicle, especially now that we're not on such good terms with the Russian Space Agency, we would need something that could not just carry men and women without killing them, but also return them to Earth. And that's why we now have the Dragon version 2. Now, check this out, Alex, if you go ahead and run that video. This is Elon Musk out in the Mojave Desert explaining to people what the new SpaceX Dragon 2 looks like, how it runs, how it works. It was a fantastic event, and it had space nerds the world over geeking out over what was possible with a little bit of private endeavor. Now, this capsule may not look like much. In fact, it looks a lot like the Dragon 1, but it's actually very, very different. Whereas the Dragon 1 could transport 7,300 pounds of cargo, it could be pressurized but relied on the ISS for air circulation, and it could remain berthed with the ISS for 30 days, it also had to be captured with the ISS robotic arm. It couldn't really maneuver on its own, and it used parachutes to slow its descent before landing in the ocean, which is pretty much what every capsule has done, that didn't have some sort of soft landing boosters. The Dragon 2 is actually entirely different. It can transport a crew of 7, or a combination of crew and cargo. It can maintain its own life support for 7 days for 7 astronauts, which is important because you don't want dead astronauts docking with the ISS. And here's the big part. It can remain berthed with the ISS for 180 to 210 days versus 30 days for the other module, for the Dragon 1. This is important because it means that it's the same longevity as the Russian Soyuz capsule. You could use this as the lifeboat, not just the ferry.
I didn't realize that there was a limit to the amount of time that the Soyuz could stay docked with.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about fuel and it's all about expendable. So anytime you have a spacecraft that goes up, it needs to be able to maintain its own environment. It needs to be able to maintain its own systems, its own power. So all spacecraft have a limit, and that's really what you're limited by. Well, this now has the ability to maintain its own life support, maintain its own power for, more than half a year, which means you could theoretically replace the Soyuz with a Dragon 2. The other cool thing about this is Elon Musk is saying that they're going to come down from the Russian price. Right now, we're paying $74 million per seat. So every time we send someone up, it costs us $74 million. Elon is saying if NASA would be willing to buy 4 of these, you could get the price down to $20 million a seat.
Wow.
Which is that's significant. That's huge price savings. Now, the other cool thing is about this, it uses side-mounted thruster assemblies to enable automated docking. So you can launch this thing, and the computer will guide it in. You don't need the ISS robotic arm, which is always That's bad. I mean, when you have two celestial bodies coming close to each other, you can cause a lot of damage.
I've seen Gravity.
You've seen Gravity, right. Yeah. And so grabbing onto something with the ISS robotic arm isn't great. The other cool thing is this. It can land vertically. As Elon Musk said, this is the way you should land a spaceship.
All the sci-fi films we've seen where they had a capsule land, this is exactly how they did it. And it's finally... The future is here.
It is here. Now, they call this propulsive landing. This is the part that I really geeked out when I started reading the specs. It uses eight engines, eight of their, they're called the Super Draco engines. They're printed out of nickel and iron using direct metal laser sintering, which is basically it goes through this fine powder and builds up layers of metal. And you could lose up to two engines and still have a safe landing. It also has a backup system. So that if it loses any of the engines, it will deploy parachutes, so it will do that kind of landing. Or it will actually do a system check before it starts the landing procedure, and if anything's wrong, it will deploy the parachute. So it's got all the safety built into it.
I'd ride in this.
I'd ride in it.
Yeah, I don't know about a Soyuz, but this sounds really cool,
sounds cool
and safe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's the thing you're going to love. Those engines, those eight Draco engines, they have them in pods. They're on the corners of the capsule. You know what they call those pods?
Pod bay doors?
Nacelles.
Nacelles.
We have freaking nacelles on our spaceship.
Now all we need is warp drive.
Okay. this is the part that had people kind of laughing. If you look at this, it looks like you got Recaro seats with racing harnesses.
Yes. Well, I mean, those work.
Why
not use them?
They work. So it's kind of sexy on the inside. I mean, this is kind of like what you would expect if Apple designed the Soyuz.
Yeah. Well, have you seen the interior? They've got touch screens and everything's... You compare that to the Apollo capsule or even the space shuttles where there's just controls everywhere and it's impossibly complicated.
I love it.
Look at this interface. This is beautiful. Yeah. It's like giant iPads, but...
Yeah, now both this, exactly, so it's got, and those come down, so you can actually push them out of the way.
Yeah.
So you've got these giant tablets that give you all your telemetry, that give you all your controls, and then you push it out of the way when you're starting your docking procedure. The other cool thing is that both the Dragon and the Dragon 2 are launched by the same space vehicle. It's the SpaceX Falcon 9, which is a two-stage launch vehicle. I know there's a lot of people in the chat room who are saying, oh, just go back to the Saturn V. Well, there's a couple of issues with the Saturn V. First, yes, there was a lot of thrust in the Saturn V, but it was so huge, it spent over half of its fuel just getting itself into space. Remember, every pound of fuel you add is another pound you have to get into space, which means you have to add more fuel. Eventually, you pass that best thrust per weight ratio. The nice thing about the way that SpaceX is designing their engines is they're not just powerful, they're far more efficient than the Saturn V ever was. And they're much cheaper to manufacture. So, folks, if you want to travel to space, this is probably how you're going to do it.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I'm really excited about this.
You got $20 million?
Not on me.
Well, if you had exactly $20 million, would you buy a seat?
Well, no, because I'd have to get lunch, too. But
thank you.
Yes.
That's our eagle eye, TD.
But... You know, if I had the money, I would love to buy a seat in this and go up to the International Space Station.
Well, how about if you had $40 million?
I don't know. Let's not worry about I don't know if I want to spend half my fortune on a weekend trip to the space station.
I don't think it would be a weekend, really.
But this is... Yeah.
Because, actually, that would just get you a seat to the ISS. You would still have to contract with the ISS for your hotel.
Well, there is a geocache up there, and I'd love to get that sometime.
Wouldn't that... how long would it last if you got the mayorship... For ISS.
Probably not long. They can
actually
check in every day.
You can, because it's moving all the time, right?
I know they have a four-square check-in for Mars for the rover.
Wow.
So they probably have something with the space station,
that's
too.
Cool.
But
all right, so
cover geocaching sometime and cover that geocache up there.
We're going to start a Kickstarter. We need $40 million to send Padre and Patrick into space.
Yep.
Normally we'd send Cranky Hippo, but he's not here, so who cares?
Well, we can sell T-shirts. We'll just put up a Teespring and we'll get the money for that.
I sent Padre into space and all I got was this stupid T-shirt. Perfect. All right. Now, we do want to move on. We're going to be doing this really cool module on If This Then That. You've probably heard about it. It's a very useful tool where you could set certain parameters that make other things happen. Have you ever read the book Demon by Daniel Suarez? It's actually exactly that. The demon is, it's not artificially intelligent. It just looks for certain events in the world, in the news feeds that go around the internet, and then it sets off events of its own. So essentially what you're doing is you're creating a demon.
cause and effect, really. It's as simple as that. If this, then that.
Okay. But before we get to the demon, let's take a little bit of time to talk about the first sponsor of Know How, and that's Lynda. Well, what is Lynda, you may ask? Lynda is the repository for knowledge online. They're where you want to go if you need to learn new skills, if you need to better yourself, if you need to remember things that you've forgotten, or if you just have a love for knowledge. Now, Lynda.com helps keep you up to date with software, learn brand new skills, and explore new hobbies with easy-to-follow video tutorials. Whether you want to make the most of your camera gear, learn the latest version of Photoshop, or edit your own video footage using Final Cut Pro, Lynda.com offers thousands of courses in a variety of topics. You can learn how to get started with your MakerBot 3D printer, prepare models for print, and troubleshoot printing issues with the MakerBot. There's also a course on organizing your photos in Lightroom 5, which teaches you how to use the library and map modules in Lightroom to organize your digital photos. You can even learn how to create detailed 2D CAD drawings with AutoCAD 2015 Essential Training. What I've been using Lynda for is to look at printer bots, because there are a lot out there. And I kind of wanted to have a little bit of knowledge before I started thinking about getting one for know-how. Well, Lynda.com has all the information organized. It's readily accessible. And I can read up on it rather than just watching a video, which I find fascinating. Now, Lynda has over 2,400 courses, with more added weekly. All Lynda.com courses are produced at the highest qualities. These aren't those homemade videos on YouTube, which we love, but, you know, if you're trying to learn something, you don't want to be distracted by bad audio or a bad camera angle or poor lighting. You don't have to worry about that with Lynda. You've got trained instructors who know their field, who are in a studio, who are with real people who make real videos, and this is what you get, this high-quality learning experience. Lynda.com works with software companies to provide you updated training the same day new versions hit the market, so you'll always have the very latest skills. They have courses for all experience levels, from beginner, intermediate, and advanced, and they let you watch from your computer, your tablet, or your mobile device. Whether you have 15 minutes or 15 hours, each course is structured so that you can learn from start to finish. You can also search the transcripts to find quick answers or read along with the video. Lynda.com also offers certificates of completion when you finish a course, which means you can publish your LinkedIn profile with your Lynda.com certificate so people understand the training you've undertaken on your own. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to get learned. We want you to pour Lynda into your learning hole. Learn something new with Lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire Lynda.com course library, or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects using the exact same assets. And you can try Lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,400 courses free for 7 days. It's all at lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Lynda for their support of know-how. Patrick. This is something that you've been cooking up for a while. You've been playing with for a while. You pitched this to me a couple of weeks ago. You're like, hey, I've got this, and I've got this, and can we put them together on know-how? So tell us, what is IFT?
Well, IFT is if this, then that.
Okay, that makes
which
sense.
Which is basically a service that gives you access to 103 different services from Twitter and Facebook and Tumblr and to YouTube
and devices on the internet,
Q-lamps, even like the Why Things Scale, and you can make it so that when one thing happens, something else happens as a result. So you've got the cause and the effect. So the cause would be like somebody favorites one of my tweets, and then the effect would be I get a text.
Okay, I got it.
Or a new episode of my favorite podcast is published, I get an email.
And so this is all automatic, right? I mean,
everything automated.
Anything with an API, basically. So any service that lets another piece of software touch their hooks, you can integrate with IFT.
Yes, it's any API that's supported by IFT. But chances are, if they have an API, they've got it in there because they've got 103. And if we look at the list here, let me bring up the list of channels here. It's crazy. They've got BuzzFeed and Evernote, Gmail, iOS contacts, Android, LinkedIn.
Wow, okay, that's pretty comprehensive.
Texts, Wemo lights, YouTube,
Now, is it really just that simple? I mean, you said, okay, so if someone texts me or someone tweets me, it sends me a text. Or if I get a new podcast, it triggers something. Is that it? Or can I do complicated events? Can I say, if this happens on Facebook and that happens on Twitter and this happens on Instagram and that happens on my scale, then do this?
No.
Oh, okay.
You can't do anything that complicated. It's literally if this, then that.
I got it.
And
got
so it has to be one cause and one effect.
Okay. Now guide me through this. It's a cool idea, and I've seen people do it, but show me how you would set up an IFT event.
Okay. Well, after you've set up an account on IFT, which is ifttt.com, you can go and create a recipe. And so we'll go into my recipes here. Any second. Their site is slow right now. Mm-hmm. I clicked on it. There we go. All right, so I've already got some that are set up here. You can see I've got, if there's a new item in my RSS feed, then this blink activates. If I post images on Facebook, then cross-post it to Tumblr.
Oh, okay. So I can do that too. So, for example, if I'm one of these people who I'm always lamenting, I hate having to post on G+ and Twitter and Facebook and blah, 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 I can instead say, hey, if I do it on Twitter, just push it everywhere else.
Yeah. Well, Google Plus actually is not
yet
in here because they have a very closed system.
Oh.
But you can have it posted everywhere else.
Okay.
So we'll set up a sample here. Why don't we do one? If I upload a YouTube video, then post about it on my Tumblr page, because I'm never on Tumblr, but I have a Tumblr page. So it's very simple, and you can see, well, if this, click on that, and it just scrolls down, so I have to pick if YouTube. And I have the options for new favorite video, watch, new watch later video, or new video uploaded. So I'll take new video uploaded. And no fields to complete, so create trigger. This is the cause. If YouTube, then, and now I go into that, the effect, the that portion. And so I want to say if there's a new YouTube video, then I want to post to Tumblr. So I hit Tumblr. And I have the options of create a text post, create a photo post, create a link post, create a quote post, create a video post, create an audio post. So I'm doing a YouTube video, so I'll do a video post. And it actually auto-populates fields. So it wants to post the URL, the description, and then some tags. So I could change the tags, and I could put know-how tag. I have the option to publish now, edit to a queue, a draft. And then these pluses give me other options, other fields I can select. The ingredients, they call it.
Okay.
So description,
so this
URL,
is, yeah. So this is
name.
Where I'm saying, okay, this is what you're going to do.
Yeah. So for this, I obviously want the URL. But for caption, I could put in, like, author name. So I could say add ingredient, and I could put in by, so it would have the description of the video, and then by P. Delahanty. And then I create action.
And
it takes a second. And it gives me the verification. I can title it something different, but if new video uploaded by Delahanty P, then create a video post on your Tumblr blog. Create recipe. It's creating, and now it's at the top of the list. So every time I upload a video to YouTube, it will post on my Tumblr.
Oh, okay. All right. So now show this actually in action. So you've created a recipe so that I've got, if this thing happens, it triggers this other thing. You've also got something that works in the physical world. So it's not just cross-posting on social networks.
Now, this, like I mentioned, that the scale, it also supports Hue lights and the Wemo. So I can turn on I have my lights at home turn on automatically.
So the Belkin stuff, it works with the Belkin stuff.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
all right.
So what I have here is, it's called the Blink One. And this is by Thing M, and it lights up. I discovered this at Maker Faire. You don't have to lower the lights yet. It's not activated. But I've got their webpage here, and this cost me under $30.
Okay.
And so it's just a USB device, and it's, you plug it in, and you can control it with scripts, and it works with if this, then that, and you could use it with Raspberry Pi, and also there's so many possibilities with this just to make a little light come on. And so this is great with if this then that, because we can make it do a light or a different color or a different flashing sequence on different actions.
So, let's set it up. I want to set it up right now. Let's tap this into your Twitter account, which is P. Delahante. So yes. Anyone at P. Delahante.
Well, let's get it set up first before we have them do the
action. No, I want them to mess up your account right now. So start pounding P. Delahante.
No.
Go ahead.
See, if this and that used to support mentions, but they took that out because of Twitter.
Because they were hitting Twitter too.
So what I'll do is I'll set up a if Twitter... new follower. I can also do new tweets by me, new tweet by me with hashtag, new tweet in my area, new link by me. Everything is about me, but new follower. So create trigger.
Oh, okay. So right now, everyone who's following P. Delahante, if you could unfollow him.
Hey!
So that you can refollow him and trigger this, that'd
all
be
right,
great.
Well, choose channel action. So I will choose the blink. And then send blink event.
Now, was that just automatically there, or did you have to add that? Now, you had to tell them you had that module.
The first time you use any of these, you have to go and tell it you have the module.
Okay,
so I had to previously get the ID of this and put it in there.
So if I start up a new IFT account, it's going to be empty until I start telling it I'm using these services.
And so you'll have to verify your Facebook account, your Twitter, but you only have to do it once. And once it's in there, it knows. So rule name, what it needs here is the rule name for my blink one. So there's a configuration tool here with a control panel, and I've set this one up here. I named it Blink When Followed, and then I can set the number of colors and the actual colors that are used. So I've set this to 4 colors, and this is green, and then this is off.
Ooh.
Let's change this to
it's pretty.
Red.
It's pretty.
It's nice. And then we'll change this one to...
Because you want them to be really different.
Yeah, yellow, and then we'll turn it off at the end with light off. And so done. And it's blink when followed. I'll copy that. Save. And so now that it's configured, I can put in the rule name here, and it knows when I'm followed, activate this rule, blink when followed. And so create recipe. And so now when people follow me on Twitter...
Can you go to this camera? So how fast is this? So I'm going to unfollow you right now.
There is a bit of a delay.
Okay.
So it's not going to be immediate, but...
basically, the refresh of the API. So I unfollow you.
But I have set it up for events, like when I publish shows, I'll have this blink, and it's pretty close to... I mean, it's not like a 15-minute delay or anything. There might be...
Unfollowed
up to a minute or
so. Everyone, go ahead and jump onto Twitter right now and follow P. Delahante. P. Delahante. And let's see how fast this thing will start to blink. Now, while we're talking about this, one of the things that has me fascinated is it doesn't just have to be a light, right? I mean, any device that can offer its API to IFT, you could potentially trigger.
Yes, like this white thing scale, this I can actually have it tweet out my weight. If I really wanted to, but maybe I should do that for motivation.
No.
I could have it post to my Facebook, my Twitter, Tumblr, I mean, there's 103 different services. So
now, could I?
The possibilities. I could have it, and it's you can do it by time. You can do weather, ESPN. I have one. So when the Red Sox win, it blinks red.
Now, let me ask this. Have you seen a lot of people, say, hacking together some solutions where it can trigger bigger things? Like, for example, I don't know, trigger home automation, trigger alarms, trigger bad things?
You could. I mean, they have WiMO motion sensors, so you could make it send a text like, hey, there's motion in my house. But, again, you can't do complex recipes because it's... one cause
it's
and one effect.
So, Patrick, we can't have it start a Doc Brown-style breakfast machine?
Exactly.
Well, you could have it start it, probably, but you can't have it do all of the things.
You kind of understate it, because this is fantastic. I love this idea of being able to leverage devices that we already use, social services that we already use, and somehow extract usable data out of it. Of course, the simplest idea is this: when a new podcast comes out that you're interested in, give me a warning. Or when I get a tweet, flash a light. Or, I don't know, when someone sends me a Facebook post, go ahead and ring a bell. These are the sorts of things that people turn into products. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and leave this on. We're going to wait to see how quickly it it will reply. There's a lot of people who are saying they followed about one. Oh, there we go. So that took about 2 minutes. So it took about 2 minutes before it started replying to anything that was happening on Twitter. Not bad. Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah.
Now, if they want to find out more about this, or they want to find out more about what you're doing, of course, the first thing they have to do is they have to go to P. Delahante, right?
Yeah, well, they should be following me already.
They should be following you. But if that's not available to them, where do they find out more about IFT?
IFT, they can go to ifttt.com, and you can remember that is if this, then that. So ifttt.com. And this Blink device, you can find that at ThingM. The URL is thingm.com.
I still kind of prefer IFT. It sounds
IFT.
It's catchy.
IFT.
IFT. Yeah. All right. Well, folks, when we come back, we're going to be showing you a little something something with backup. But first, I thought maybe I should bring you back to Maker Faire 2014, Patrick. One of the big issues that a lot of people have with becoming makers is they don't have a place for their maker lab.
I have that problem too.
Exactly. I mean, space is at a premium in most places, especially if you live in a city where you can't just like build something really quickly.
Yeah.
You end up with people emptying out old dens or emptying out in a garage, which is not ideal.
I'm trying to make a Groot costume, and I don't have a place to do it.
Exactly. you want a place where you could set up your gear, set up your tools, and just have it ready to go. For example, I have a friend right now in San Francisco who he's a great maker. He does a lot of cosplay stuff, but his lab is the kitchen table, so he always has to move his stuff in and out. Pain in the butt.
Yeah, I know that issue well.
Well, what if I told you that you didn't have to do that? What if I told you that you could just drop something in front of your house, no permits, no nothing, and that becomes your makerspace?
Really?
Yeah. Hey, Alex, hit me. If you're going to be a maker, you need a maker space. Now, you could try to repurpose something in your home, or you could just build your own. I'm here with David Wilson at Avava, and we're going to talk all about the Folly One. Well, this is it's a unique product. Essentially, it looks like a prefab, but it's not really.
This is what we call a flat pack construction. It's pre-assembled, and we have 18 parts that make up the main structure that you see behind me. The idea is that any two people could put this together in a matter of minutes using common hand tools.
Now, we just saw you both disassemble this thing in about 10 minutes and put it back together in about 13. And it's designed out of wood. It's designed so it could be compressed down into, 8 by 12? Which means that you could shove roughly 15 to 20 of these in the back of a 40-foot trailer.
Yeah, that's the idea, is that we can put a lot into a small space and then make a lot bigger spaces down the road, wherever you need them.
Okay, now I get that, and it's cool. I love the ability to sort of pop up a city, a little structure when you need it. But what are you selling this for? I mean, what market do you want this to go in? Is it disaster preparedness? Is it just temporary structures? Where do you see the Folly One finding its niche?
We really don't have a niche. We're looking at the entire market. We're looking at pop-up buildings. We're looking at rear yard offices and additional rooms. Pretty much anything you want to do with it. It's you have the space, you do with it what you want.
Okay, let's geek out for a second here. All right, now you chose an all-wood construction. Why is that? I mean, I know a lot of others would say, well, let's go with plastic. Let's go with some high-impact materials. Let's use a lot of metal in it. But you went all natural.
The reason is that we think that wood construction is about 100 years behind the times. We think that with these engineered wood products like I-joists and plywood, that we're not taking advantage of the properties that are inherent in the products. So we designed the joist lock as a way to use the inherent properties of the I-joists to lock them together at the intersections and create moment frames. And that's something that no one else has done.
All right, now let's get down to brass tacks. People are going to say, okay, well, how much does one of these structures cost? And how many permits am I going to have to get to drop this in front of my house so that I can have my own little makerspace?
So the structure you see behind me is the basic Maker Faire model. It's the do-it-yourself. We give you a roof, we give you a floor, and we give you the four corners. The basic kit comes in a flat pack that's 4 feet by 8 feet by about 30 inches off the ground, and that goes for $2,500. The more deluxe versions go anywhere from there up to about $10,500, which is the one that's behind me that's we call the Tesla model.
And what about that permits issue? Because I know there's a lot of people who are like, wait a minute, I can't just drop something in front of my house and have the city go crazy on me.
Well, that's the entire reason we designed the shape and size the way we did, because it's 8 feet by 12 feet, which gives you 96 square feet. That's less than 100 square feet, which most cities require permits at. And then it's less than 8 feet off the ground. That's one of the reasons that we use pressure-treated wood for the floor, so that you can actually put it on the ground and you don't have to worry about getting coming into contact with water over the long term.
So $2,500, you don't have to worry about permits, and you can build your own space.
That's correct.
Now, obviously, there's some profit built into there, because $2,500 for that. I know there's some people in the chat room who are saying, that's a little steep. It is.
Yeah.
But you also have to remember that it's not entirely profit. Those I-joists are a little expensive to build. There is a little bit of structural steel in there. But more than that, the ability to assemble and disassemble a structure means that they're going to have to spend a little bit of money to make it robust. This is not just a couple of two by fours nailed together.
Yeah, I wish I had the space for that.
You don't have a 12 by 10 foot space?
Well, we can give up the patio.
Yeah, I'm sure. Your fiance would have no problem with you just giving up the patio. No, but seriously, the idea of being able to set up what is essentially a shed, because a city permit doesn't normally kick in until 100 square feet. So if this is 96 square feet, you could just put this up. No permits whatsoever. The other cool thing, I saw we were actually playing around with this at Maker Faire, because the floor is also in panels, you can pre-install all your electronics on the floor and then just lay it down. So even if you have to pack it up, you could be literally back up with a network, wireless, power, everything within about 20 minutes.
Wow.
It's a fantastic system, and I'm thinking that even if they don't make it, even if Avava isn't the name that becomes synonymous with these sort of maker spaces, eventually people are going to get sick of having to make do with what they got, and they're going to find sheds, high-tech sheds.
Yeah. Well, I know some people have made sheds shaped like a TARDIS. That's pretty cool.
I would do that. I would do that. But the TARDIS that's elongated because... No, it's spoilers. All right, now, once you've got your makerspace, the question is, what do you do with it? Which is why we're going to take a break and talk about the second sponsor of this episode of Know How, and that is iFixit. Now, when you have your makerspace, when you have your place to play, you're going to need the proper tools to play with your gear inside that space. That's why we're taking a look at the ProTek screwdriver toolkit and this magnetic mat. Now, iFixit, if you haven't ever watched any Twit programming, is a free online repair manual store for everything. They have more than 10,000 repair guides for everything from electronics like your smartphone, your tablet, and your game console, to your home appliances, your clothing, and even your bike. They also have foolproof instructions to fix all your stuff. If you've shattered your iPhone screen, need to repair the red ring of death on your Xbox, or swap the battery in your Galaxy S3, iFixit has got you covered with parts, tools, and repair guides. Today, we are introducing two new iFixit tools. This is the ProTek Toolkit, and this is the Magnetic Project Mat. Now, the ProTek screwdriver set is, it's one screwdriver kit to rule them all. It's a lot smaller than the other kit that we've been playing with, which is nice because the experts over at iFixit got together and they said, what are the 15 tools that we need? We absolutely must have. And they put it on the one set. Now, these are all black oxide tipped, so you're not going to have to worry about stripping them or chipping them. And they've also got this nice pivot vortex on the back so that it gives you a bit better leverage along with this rubberized coating, so you always have a grip on the things that you're repairing, disassembling, or putting back together. The custom tool roll makes this a handy portable toolkit for amateurs and professional fixers alike. And at $59.95 with a lifetime warranty, it's kind of a perfect gift, especially for, I don't know, maybe Father's Day. Now, this is actually very understated. I really like this. This is a magnetic project mat. If you've ever had this tub of screws that you come up with at the end of a project, you understand why this is cool. One bump, one trip, one drop, and all your screws go everywhere. And even in a container like this, you don't remember where these went. Well, what you can do with this is put them on the project mat and separate them into the quadrants that you you took the devices for. This is a dry erase board, so I can label where these screws came from in my individual projects. And because it's magnetic, I don't have to worry about my screws going all over the place. You'll never lose another screw at for $19.95. Not a bad deal at all. Now, with iFixit, you can fix it yourself. Visit iFixit.com/twit for more than 10,000 free step-by-step guides. iFixit also sells every part and tool that you'll ever need. Enter the code KNOWHOW at checkout, and you'll save $10 off of any purchase of $50 or more. That's iFixit.com/twit, and we thank iFixit for their support of KNOWHOW. Boom.
Stay right there.
Yeah, I know. Except for there are a couple of non-magnetic screws here.
Oh, that's plastic.
Oh, well, yeah.
Burke!
What's wrong with him? All right, now, let's get away from iFixit. Yeah. Let's get away from our makerspace.
Wrap this back up.
One of the questions that we've received from our audience members over at our Google Plus community page is all about backup, specifically about 3-2-1. You've heard about 3-2-1, right?
3-2-1 contact? I used to watch that all the time.
No, gosh, you old people are weird. No, I'm talking specifically about 3-2-1. That's the backup methodology, the idea that if you think you have a backup but you don't have three copies on two different types of media, one, at least one, being in a different space, then you really don't have a backup. I mean, right? That's how it works. If you don't have those three copies, you just have to assume that you're going to lose your data at some point and you're going to be very, very unhappy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, do you follow 3-2-1?
No. I should. I have backups, but they're all in the same place.
Okay, so you understand the problem there, right?
Yeah, if my place burns down while I'm here, I'm
then
in trouble.
You're in trouble, right. Which is why we always want to make sure we have that 3-2-1. But one of our audience members by the name of, oh, I'm sorry, let me find him here, John Mink, he wanted to know, he watched an episode of Twiat where we were talking about 3-2-1. We were talking about backup for Soho, for Twiat. Might be a little bit outdated. Yeah. 3-2-1 worked really, really well when we had a couple of floppies worth of data. It worked really well even when we had like a hard drive or two. But now that many of us have multiple terabytes or even petabytes, 3-2-1 is...
It's tough.
It's really, really tough, right? I mean, imagine. Okay, I just in my lab, so not including the stuff that I've done here at Twit, just in my lab alone, I have over 5 petabytes worth of data. There's no way I'm going to be able to make three copies of that. It's not going to happen. Yeah. Now, a lot of that is static, but still, trying to buy 15 petabytes worth of storage space is going to be crazy expensive. And not only that, if I ever have to sync and I have to keep that data in at least one other place...
It's going to take a long time to sync up all that stuff.
It's a nightmare. And I personally think that 3-2-1 is a great idea when you can have it. But I am now pushing a graded view of backup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this is what I think. The idea of three copies, two different pieces of media, one other place is the ideal. And I think that you should still do that on anything that's vital. So, for example, in my personal network, if I have documents and personal photos, things that are absolutely irreplaceable, I still follow 3-2-1 to a T. I always have three copies. They're always going to be on two different types of media. And I'm always going to have something that's off-site. But when I start dealing with things like assets, video assets, that they're important, but they're kind of replaceable. I mean, sure, the stuff that I shot down in Brazil or the stuff that I shot in Russia, that stuff is hard to come by. But, I mean, I can probably scavenge stuff if I ever needed to create a project. Well, I'm going to start weighing the importance of that data against the fact that I don't want to back up 5 terabytes that it took for Russia or the 15 terabytes it took for Bolivia and Brazil. So this is what I do. This is how my graded system works. Mission critical data, 3-2-1. Cloud service counts as a copy, but it does not count as another physical place. Okay, so that's, in other words, I will count the copy that I keep in OneDrive or Dropbox as an additional copy, but I don't count it as an additional medium, and I don't count it as the offsite backup.
Why not? Because it is offsite.
It is offsite, but as we've seen with some hacks recently, the problem with cloud is all your devices can affect cloud, and if someone gets a hold of one of your devices, or if you accidentally delete something from one of your devices that is syncing to the cloud, you've just killed it.
Okay.
Right. So, in other words, my mission critical stuff, it's 3-2-1, but it's unsynced 3-2-1. In other words, I want the ability for one of my devices to completely just be totally compromised. I'm not talking about just losing data. I'm talking about like some 4-year-old sits down at my computer and thinks it's funny that he deletes my documents. Well, if that's linked up to the cloud, it's going to delete it out of the cloud as well, and I'm screwed, right?
Yeah. No, the cloud's still good if you need to get to your documents from somewhere else.
Exactly, right. Yeah. Which is why I count it as another copy. I just don't count it as the separate medium or the offsite.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, one step down from that, personal data is 3-2-1. So no longer mission critical, but personal data. I do use 3-2-1, but now I count my cloud service as a copy and as another location. In other words, even if someone goes crazy and deletes something off my computer, theoretically, I should still have another copy somewhere else that I can get a hold of.
Right.
I'm not all that paranoid. Then I have vital. So I go from mission critical to personal, then I go down to vital. My vital video assets are divided between 3-2-1 and 3-1-1. So finished files have three copies because they're kind of compressed, right? Yeah. But if they're raw files, I only do 2-1-1. I have two different copies. It's on one other type of medium, and it's in one other location. And one of those locations includes something like this.
And what is this?
This is heavy. He's a beer. Okay, this is an IOSAFE 214. This is a two-bay RAID device. So it's RAID 0, so it's mirrored. So I have two exact copies of the data on two separate hard drives that are in there. I have two 4-terabyte RAID drives. This thing can survive 30 minutes at, I can't remember, it was like 4,000 degrees. It can survive being submerged for several days.
Well, let's try it.
I already have. We have set these things on fire. We've run them over with tractors. They do survive. Now, the cool thing about this is I can have one of these alongside one of these. So this is just a standard 4-terabyte external drive, right?
Yeah, that's like what I use.
Exactly. So I can have this connected to this, and this is keeping a backup of goes in this drive. Yeah. Well, see, no, actually, keep that on. Keep the fire. Keep it going. Good. Oh. This is perfect. If there's a fire and these two are together, this is going to die.
Yeah.
Right? This is going to die. But this is not. And I still have a third copy somewhere else connected on my network. Typically, it will be on the campus, but it will be far enough away so that any localized disaster is not going to take them both out. The advantage of doing it this way is this is crazy fast, and if I have both of them on my network, I have what's called high availability. If one of those arrays drops out, it automatically switches to the other. I also have reliability built into this. This is a mirrored array, so if one of these drives fails, I still have the other. Right. I don't count this as a backup, but I do count it as another place to store my data. So a couple other things that you should know. Make sure that if you have a NAS, right now there is nothing better than the Western Digital Red series of NAS drives. Seagate just released a new NAS series. They're almost there, but what I really like about the Red drives is they run cool. In fact, you can go back. One of the quick tips we did on KnowHow a few episodes back is we compared the running temperature of the Red to the Green to the Black to a couple of Seagate drives. This beat them by up to 20 degrees. And, of course, cooler temperatures means longer-lived drives.
Yeah.
Right?
And less cooling costs, so cheaper just to run.
Right. So this is a long, long way to get around to the fact that 3-2-1 is still important, and I still like things like these 6-terabyte Seagate drives, and I'll use them in my arrays. But I think we need to start looking at a graded system of backup. It's not so clear which needs which copies. You have to decide what works for you. If you use mine, you'd be dividing them between vital, between personal, and between mission critical, personal, and vital.
Yeah, and I agree, because my photos and some videos, I do want to make sure I have those backed up as many places as I can. But, you know, my backup of Photoshop,
yeah,
I could reinstall it. It's easier to just get it off the backup.
Right, right. And you know, there are certain things that need to be synced more quickly than others.
Yeah.
So, folks, I guess what we're saying is just use common sense. That's kind of a letdown.
Yeah.
I don't like that. All right, well, how about this? We are going to be closing the show. We're running out of time. But before we did that, we've got this new thing we're doing called the parting shot. We scour the internet for things that we find interesting. And, hey, Korea, you're full of poop.
Thank you. right?
Yep. So this, in Korea, this is, they decided that plungers are dirty and nasty and disgusting. So instead, they use this thing to create a seal around the toilet. Now, this is important to check the seal multiple times. It has to absolutely be sealed to the basin. And then you flush. Now, this is my favorite part, Patrick. Here we go. No! No! What are you doing?
Oh!
No!
Now I know why it has to be sealed. No! There's one leak.
Oh, that's the... Oh, don't push it again. No, what are you doing?
Oh, my God. This could go very bad very quickly.
Oh, no. Man, Korea's
But now
weird.
It's... Now there's a vacuum in there.
Okay, see, now what I've done is, yeah, I don't have a plunger, but now I have a piece of really nasty plastic.
Ew.
I don't.
Now, do they have to be brown in this demo?
I know. Okay, now, we applaud cool ideas and innovative ways to deal with common problems here on Know How, and this is kind of innovative. Here's the thing. There's a few things that are wrong with this. One, and you pointed this out.
One is they used brown water. They used blue water in those commercials for a reason.
Absolutely. But the other thing is you're only one little poking tear or one bad seal from having a horrible, horrible day. Can you
squirt out?
You pressurize the poop, okay? That's not a good thing. And it's plastic, so I can imagine someone being a bit overzealous going, why won't this flush? Okay, and even if it works as advertised, here's the other problem. You know how water comes out of the top of the bowl into the bottom?
Yeah.
Well, you're allowing it to go all the way up to the top, and then you're pressurizing. So essentially, you're pushing the crappy water back up into the water reservoir, which means you're giving yourself an upper decker. I don't know.
Why did I agree to be on this episode?
No.
Okay, so that happened.
Okay, that happened.
Hey,
all right.
Did you see I set up a if this then that for if there's a new item published in the Know How HD feed, then it goes to blink. And it's going to make it blink when this episode's published.
Okay, well, we're going to keep this on the drop cam so you can watch it. Now, we one quick parting shot. We're going to be doing a couple of episodes on Know How coming up, if you can go to the overhead shot, that are all about this. That's right. Folks, if you grew up like me building remote control models and you were just geeking out over them, guess what? There's a lot of lessons to be had in remote control models about the DIY lifestyle, about making stuff. We are going to be building some high-performance models, some really cool, flexible models, and then Brian and I are going to break stuff.
Yeah?
So you can see.
Going to do some battle bots?
Stay tuned for that, maybe. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see who gets to sponsor us. Until next time, remember that you can always find our show notes. I know we covered a lot of material here. You can find them at twit.tv/KH. There you'll find not just all of our episodes, but you'll be able to see the notes that we've published for each one of those episodes. And I know, like, for example, what Patrick did with IFT, it's going to be a little different. You're going to want to make sure you know what's going on. What I'm going to be doing with the backup, those notes will be in there. Make sure you check it out. Make sure you find what we're doing, and make sure that you follow us. Also, you can't reach us on email. I mean, you can write us at knowhow@twit.tv, but we're not going to answer. Instead, what you should do is go to our G+ community. That's gplus.to/twitkh. There you can join 6,600 people and growing as we discuss the things that are important to us. You can talk about cool new technology, cool new tools that you've seen, and, I don't know, answer the question of a noob or two. It's all part of being a know-it-all. Also, you can find us on Twitter. One of the easiest ways to figure out what we're doing in the next episode is follow me on twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's at PadreSJ. Or you can find our sometime co-host at...
P. Delahanty. They're probably following me already if they followed our advice with
If you're getting
that thing's flashing like crazy with all your new followers.
Oh, and by the way...
I got at least one.
Also follow our TD, Alex, at AnAl3. Alex, you want to say something?
No, I'm good.
Until next time, I'm Father Robert Balasair.
And I'm Patrick Delahanty.
And now that you know,
do it now!